wall plug once yours is done. Mine's at 17.
We're ready.
We're ready, Dean.
Okay. Okay, this is to open the city council work session for April 18th, 2022. Piggy, roll call, please.
Kaplan. Hall.
Here.
Goble.
Here.
Sawyer.
Here.
Jacoby.
Here.
Parker.
Here.
And Mateo.
Okay, Spencer.
Tonight we have two items that we're covering on the work session. The first is going to be discussion of homelessness initiatives and camping ordinance regulations. The second thing that we'll be talking about is the schedule for public engagement with the housing study that'll be undertaken by the, that's currently underway actually with the city that'll be occurring over the next just short of a year. Following this meeting, following the work session, we do have a brief urban renewal meeting set up. We have a public hearing on the supplemental budget, and then Councilor Parker has wanted a brief update on the urban renewal land that Derek's prepared to provide. And then we'll go into the regular council meeting shortly after that time period. On the homelessness initiatives and camping, the city has had a number of recent initiatives to assess homeless individuals in Newport. That included creating a car camping area with extra trash and restroom capabilities. We provided funding to Grace Winds Haven for emergency shelter during cold weather conditions during the course of the winter months. Installed porta potties, as you know, at City Hall, Grace Winds Haven, and the library to meet needs for folks that are without homes. We've designated the community service officer to conduct homeless outreach, coordinate camp cleanups, and provide other assistance. The police department provides the garbage bags to known homeless camps, and Public Works provides a pickup of those bags from those locations. The city provides financial support for the shower facility at Grace Winds Haven as well. There are a number of other outstanding issues that we're currently working on. The council did appropriate $200,000 for general homelessness initiatives. Most of that is still intact. We've been working with a couple organizations regarding the possible use of those funds for creating additional options for homeless individuals. We had discussions with Lincoln County regarding potential joint efforts to address homelessness utilizing these funds, and we've had and we've discussed the pilot funding that will be provided to Lincoln County to address homelessness on a regional basis as well. In addition to the $200,000, we have appropriated $200,000 additional in ARPA funds for the homelessness initiatives. These funds can be part of the mix to provide a more significant long-term impact to the future. I think the one of the key things with these funds is to try to find a way to use these funds to create something that's long-term versus dealing with the immediate conditions in any given year. Again, those funds will get carried over into the next fiscal year if they are not appropriated for a specific project this year. So again, that's an area that that we continue to work on. One of the primary challenges in Newport is the limited capacity of our nonprofits to provide services in the community, even with the support from the city and others. Finding capacity is going to be an important thing going forward in the future, and whether we build that internally or we work with outside organizations that could provide some of the services that are customary in some other communities in conjunction with local government and other funders. These efforts are ongoing. The city in and of itself is not a social service agency. We're not staffed to provide direct services beyond some of the things that we've done. We do have capability of providing implementation funding and partnering with nonprofits and social service agencies to try to provide a higher level service in the community. Another challenge, and this is going to be the focus of our discussion tonight, is addressing camping in the city of Newport. We've had a lot of frustration from people with the fact that we cannot enforce our existing camping ordinance because the provisions of it are not constitutional. And we will need to replace that ordinance with a ordinance that will pass both the evaluation of the federal court rulings regarding camping, as well as a state statute that's been approved by the Oregon legislature regarding camping provisions. And again, we wanted to have an opportunity to talk a little bit about a draft program that we've put together, which was modeled after a camping ordinance that was adopted in Coos Bay and also in McMinnville. We met with a group of stakeholders on Tuesday, April 5th, to consider feedback on the version of the draft ordinance that's included in this packet. The participants in that meeting included Tracy Flowers from Gracewinds Haven, Blair Bobbier from Legal Aid Services, Judy Kuhl from the Chamber of Commerce, Gabe McEntee from Moe's Restaurants, and Andrea Langoliers from Roby's Furniture. We received a variety of comments at this meeting to share with council. Some of the concerns were with some of the provisions in the ordinance limiting the time that people could rest or sleep in a public right-of-way area. And the other issue is challenge of what do individuals do with their belongings during the course of the day. We also had concerns on the other end of the spectrum that expressed why would we allow camping in the city at all. That's not really a choice that we have. We do have to provide opportunities for camping. We can regulate things like time and place, and the draft ordinance that we've attached for your review covers that. And so I'd like to turn it over to Chief Malloy to kind of walk through the key provisions of that ordinance. And then we do have folks that participated in the earlier meeting, and I think it'd be appropriate to hear from them about their ideas or thoughts or concerns with this approach. And from our standpoint, we're looking for some direction from the council as to either this approach is something that we can further develop and pursue, or if council's looking at a different direction, we need to know that as well. And so having some preliminary indication at the end of this as to whether we're on the right track or whether there's a different pathway council wants to find will be important. Yep.
If I could just throw out real quick, we've got a couple emails this afternoon late and from people that say we should not do anything with, we should not ban camping anywhere in Newport. We should welcome them anywhere in town. I just wanted to throw out that we got those emails late.
Okay. So at this point, I'll turn it over to the chief. And why don't you kind of walk folks through the draft that's attached for your review.
Okay. Thank you. Good evening, Council. Jason Malloy, Chief of Police for Newport PD. And so hopefully you have the draft ordinance in front of you, and we won't go line by line, but we'll kind of go over some of the similarities of our current ordinance and then mainly a lot of the changes. Like Spencer stated and alluded to, our current ordinance is non-enforceable. There's many parts of our ordinance that do not meet federal regulations, do not meet state regulations, and those are based on recent state laws and also federal court rulings. And what the fact of doing nothing is really not an option for us for the simple fact that we do receive numerous complaints for what people describe as unlawful camping, excessive garbage, health violations, things like that. And so what the ordinance does in front of you is it meets many of the requirements that the federal government has put in place, that the Ninth Circuit, such as the time, place, and manner of where camping can be allowed, and also the recent state laws. The other is it does help regulate it so that it is not a carte blanche where camping can occur anywhere in the city of Newport. But going through the ordinance, one of the things, it did add a few definitions, and it also added a temporary camping program, which we currently have now. The city has the authority to grant religious institutions, their parking lots, the ability to camp or provide for people to park, camp, rest, whatever they may choose. But this also expands it more into single-family dwellings that our zoning ordinances currently restrict the ability for people to park an RV or something like that on the property. It also expands to more real property industrial areas, things like that. Moving on as you go through it, meanwhile, it does allow for all these. It's not just anybody can do it. There's still steps and processes that somebody that wants to take this on has to go through, whether it's an application through the city, some kind of process. It's just ultimately me to ensure that if this goes into effect and we do follow this, that whoever is applying for this is just going to make sure they're following certain rules. And a lot of those are going to have to do with community development and current other regulations. Going on, kind of the biggest thing that where we have had the most discussion, many internal meetings, and then also involving the stakeholders that Spencer mentioned, is there's a section called camping in prohibited certain places. One of the things we did agree upon when writing this, and again, backing up when Spencer mentioned McMinnville and Coos Bay, they both have successful ordinances that have made a big impact, where they're still allowing people the right to rest, still not depriving people of any of their rights, but able to still regulate it. And I don't want to use the word make the business and resident community happy, but more of a happy medium, where by regulating it, it's not everywhere. It helps maintain a little bit of sense of order. It helps maintain the garbage, helps maintain sanitary conditions, things like that. And so the areas that were identified among city staff was excluded areas would be all city parks, all publicly owned and maintained parking lots. And then that's pretty much where it went downhill. From there, it was, when you look at Coos Bay, they are laid out much different than us. So they could say R1 zones, R2 zones, water zones, things like that. They could map out certain areas. When we put their definitions into something that we would recommend, it left nowhere in Newport that camping could be authorized. And so Derek Tokos will go through the maps. He is a lot more versed, understands those a lot better than I do. But he'll discuss some of the recommendations that we had on areas that would either be allowed and or prohibited based on if they're not allowed. Moving on is still, once this is identified, and I guess once we get direction from the council, you know, we will then come back with whatever it is you like. But we still have certain things that we have to be able to meet. We have to be able to meet people's constitutional rights. People still have the right to rest. So while we have had a lot of comments and we've had several people mention maybe we could just ban this everywhere, and if somebody wants to camp anywhere in Newport, they can be near Newport but not in it. As Spencer said, that's not legal. We cannot do that. But we can regulate it. And one of the big things that we had identified was that has shown success in McMinnville and Coos Bay was identifying hours when resting or camping was actually permitted. And the one that we in the ordinance, the draft ordinance, is from camping is prohibited on public property between the hours of 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. This means no tents, no personal property, things like that may be stored on city property or any public property. Between 8 and 6 p.m., yes, that's the times that we've identified, you know, when most people are resting. Now, there has been things that have come up, you know, what about somebody that maybe is homeless but works and they work at night and so they have to sleep during the day? Right now, we don't have an answer. There are, again, this is a start and this is a draft, and we'll be able to massage this, change this, be able to meet the majority of the needs of things that come up. We've had a lot of comments that have come up, even just within our own internal work group, that we don't have the answers to. So one of the questions that has come up is, what is the legality of prohibiting camping between 6 a.m. and 8 p.m.? There is not. There is not a written word that says you must allow between this time, you cannot allow between this time. What the federal court ruling is just has made a reasonable effort to provide time, place, and distance for somebody to be able to rest, or time, place, and manner. And what that means is we cannot pick a spot 2 miles south of the bridge that's still in the city because of the fact it is not reasonably close to services, needs, things like that for somebody. So there still has to be a reasonable effort to make available services within a reasonable time and place for somebody to get to. Yes.
And along those lines, under House Bill 3115, which is passed by the legislature, which we also have to comply with, They refer to time, place, and manner regulations being objectively reasonable. So that gets to what you said earlier.
Right. So again, not a clear-cut definition, but a reasonable standard, which is what a lot of, in law enforcement, a lot of our things are a reasonable standard versus a clear-cut definition. Moving forward, there is still Oregon law now talks about scheduling in the notice of camp cleanups. So you'll frequently, if you've been around Newport and one day you see a camp and a few days later it's not there, that's because of our requirement to make sure that we're posting, we're giving everybody at least 72 hours notice before any of their property is removed. When I talked to the Coos Bay staff, specifically the chief of police, he said that was pretty much about the biggest, when you're looking at like the carrot and stick that they used, is people do not want to lose their property. And so the fact that they are giving 72 hours notice and giving people the opportunity to get their items is they've noticed a lot of compliance. This has increased from the 24 hours that it was prior to our law changing. We also are required to keep anything that we do pick up for 30 days, which we currently do. We have a site in Newport where if we do clean up a camp, whether we believe it's garbage or not, it's somebody's property, so it is stored. After 30 days, we go through the disposal process. And you've heard me talk before, we are spending tens of thousands of dollars annually on cleaning up camps and the disposable of the cleaning and the disposing of them. One of the things that I think Spencer had mentioned, you know, our blue bag program, is this is really helped by us delivering bags to camps, making arrangements for them to clean up their own camps, and then putting the bags in a particular area, and city staff will then go pick them up and dispose at them at our cost. This has been very successful. We are seeing less camps, and we are seeing more people, using the term policing themselves, because they realized if their camps are cleaner, we generally stay away. When their camps are cleaner, there's less complaints. So that goes through the removal of the property, and then the permitting camping. Is there's still camping that is permitted in various areas, and Derek's going to go through the areas that we're recommending or suggesting, or at least, I guess, starting the conversation of what areas of Newport do we allow. So again, keeping in mind, well, we have had a lot of comments that would like to prohibit it or would like to restrict it even more. I agree with a lot of the maps that Derek's are going to talk about was things that we had discussed internally. It wasn't random. There was a lot of thought put into what are we going to prohibit and why, and where are we going to allow and why. So it wasn't necessarily a dartboard approach. And I am happy to answer any questions.
Ryan.
So what guidance has DOJ given the city about what that Boise decision actually means on this day and time? It seems like my understanding is some people are challenging that and it's working its way through the federal appeals court system. So when do we know for sure that this is settled case law or not? And I understand cities need to lead while we're waiting for those decisions, but it sure would be nice to know what other cities of this size are doing outside of the two examples that you provided.
I could tell you locally, Lincoln City is going through the same process we are. Okay. They've obtained the Coos Bay model. They've looked at ours. I've sent them all of our paperwork. I think they're kind of trying to also just waiting to see because they know we're going through this process, how it works for us. We could end up being a model for coastal agencies. So right now there's not a lot. I mean, if you go to Portland, you go to Salem, you see that there's not a lot being done, but those are also on a very large scale where there's limited resources to deal with. As far as the Court of Appeals making this case law, for us, this is case law. And I mean, and this is the direction that we go. Oregon has also made those two House bills that are now law that David Allen has mentioned. We also have, there was a Grants Pass decision that the court ruled on that was similar to the Boise decision, so it was a lot more closer to home in the fact that it was Oregon, and that's where the time, place, manner rule came up. And I know that the League of Oregon Cities has this under review and is expected to give some guidance soon. I don't know when that's going to be. I attended a chief's workshop, well, multiple, maybe a half a dozen chiefs workshops. The chiefs around the state and law enforcement executives are, because we didn't have guidance, you know, what can we do? What can we do as leaders to come up with plans or models and things like that? Right now, there's still a lot of no answers. A lot of areas have more additional funding. They have more access to multiple Grace Wind type nonprofits that are able to step up and fund or monitor these events, oversee them, things like that. There's no cities or no counties that are monitoring any of these events. It's just, it's a time and resource that municipal governments don't have and county governments don't have. The other, I guess, challenge that we're looking at is really the biggest challenge we have is we don't have a current rule or an ordinance. And we need to have a rule or an ordinance that guides us one way or another. And then also it gives our citizens, our business community, and our homeless community some relief to at least know what those rules are. Really long answer. Sorry, Mr. Parker, for not directly answering, but we don't have a direct answer from the courts.
So Martin v. Boise, the Ninth Circuit decision, there was a petition to the Supreme Court for review. The U.S. Supreme Court denied review, so that Ninth Circuit decision stands, and it's no longer appealable because Supreme Court denied review.
Thank you.
Ryan, are you done?
Yeah, I'm thinking about my response to that, but I'll wait. Somebody else can go first.
CM.
Okay. My question was why Coos Bay and McMinnville and what other cities' camping ordinances did you look at?
So the only ones that we've actually seen current success with is the McMinnville and Coos Bay. I've gone to the, again, by going through the chief's group that I was a part of, the homeless committee, and there was about two dozen of us that met about a half a dozen times. McMinnville was the first one that I know of to actually come up with something, and then Coos Bay was the next one. And I haven't, and I know a lot of other agencies or cities are using those two as models to go through the similar process that we are.
Anyone else? Cynthia, and then David.
I'm concerned about the limit on the hours. It seems pretty arbitrary. What are the reasons for those hours? I would suspect that it would be so that all day long, people who have homes wouldn't have to observe this happening or have the mess in front of their eyes or in their neighborhoods. But it just seems so arbitrary to me that that is not acceptable.
But I don't, and I guess I don't really think it's arbitrary. I think it's a relatively objective number for the fact between 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. is the majority of the time when the majority of businesses in the resident community is going to be out and about. Prior to 6 a.m., there's not very many businesses that are open, but many do start opening. The workers start showing up, the owners, whatever, in those early morning hours to start work at, say, 8 o'clock. Frequently, we get calls where there's people in my doorway. I'm scared to go to work. And while many of the people that are there are harmless, the people that are approaching them don't know that. And so, and I guess I don't have a really good answer, but I think it is relatively objective when you pick those hours for the reasons that I mentioned.
I think the other thing too is if you had, say 12 hours, someone could camp on a site, not having a beginning point and an ending point makes enforcement almost impossible. If we're going to enforce complaints. So because you'd have to literally have a clock on when someone started camping in a location or not. So having a set of hours, whatever they may be, makes it something that's possible to enforce. And I think that's probably the reason for set hours.
And if I can add, one of the things that Coos Bay found very, and McMinnville found very successful was an education component. They didn't put the ordinance into effect Monday and start enforcing it on a Tuesday. It was several months that the community knew that this ordinance was coming because it had been approved. There was quite the implementation date was out quite a ways. Both agencies identified a homeless liaison officer that worked with the homeless community to let them know that this was coming, to let them know what their options were. Again, working with groups like Grace Wind, to be able to get this word out, you know, and seek other resources. You know, we need help doing this. One of the things they found was, okay, the same question, somebody has to pack up by 6, 7, whatever time it is in the morning, what do they do with their stuff? That's where the nonprofit groups come in that can help store things for their people who are out going to work, looking for work, or doing whatever it is they choose to do during those times.
Is there any place in our city where people can store belongings besides Grace Winds?
If this was going to start today or tomorrow, the answer is no. But again, these are part of the things that we're looking at, we're working, and we're discussing. You know, I think it would be immature of us to put an ordinance into effect, not immature, premature to put an ordinance into effect immediately without some of those solutions. As Spencer indicated, there are funds available, but, you know, I think we need to use those the right way, identify the correct way, and how can we answer some of those questions? Where can we store things? That is an excellent question. And I know that it's a question we also asked that we want to be able to identify. We just don't have an answer yet.
Okay, David and then Ryan.
Yeah, so House Bill 3115, which sets the time, place, manner regulations, or parameters, I should say, that the legislature put in place, they enacted the law in 2021. That law does not take effect until July 1st, 2023. So there's still some time to kind of work through some of the issues. And along those lines, the League of Oregon Cities, hopefully this month or early next month, is going to be publishing guidance for cities throughout the state as far as how to put in place these types of ordinances and what are the issues that we need to be aware of. So even though we're talking about this now and we're looking at the maps, as far as the text of the actual ordinance itself, which is still in very rough draft form, Jason basically patterned it after the Coos Bay ordinance, so we still have a lot of work to do. We would still want to look at the League of Oregon City's guidance and see how they want to recommend we handle these issues before we actually put it something in more of a final form for really more further discussion and potential adoption in the future.
And we also had, if I may, Mayor, in some of the chief's meetings we've had, is we've had the most recent one had the city attorneys for Boise that were handled all of this, the city attorneys for Grants Pass. Also, our insurance carrier CIS was at the last one. And so, I mean, CIS is something that we have to pass everything through because they're the ones representing us. They have absolutely no problems with the Coos Bay ordinance, which we've modeled after, thinking that it does meet all of the standards that have been set by the state and federal government.
Okay, Ryan?
I guess normally ordinances don't have line item funding attached to them, but I'm wondering the structure of what our camp response now versus the response, how that would shift for logistics and staff time to after posting and clean up some of these areas, like how would we ensure some environmental mitigation? Does that need to be in the ordinance? I guess that's my first question. Second question is, are we able to contract with a hauler rather than having city staff city staff find the spots and then the CSOs post them and then specifically to camping and forest environments, I wonder if we could approach Thompson's for maybe a lump sum donation incident specifically. I think this volume of items that are in these camps do have an environmental component, and I'd like to see compliance with the law and the Martin v. Boise decision. However, I think there's an opportunity for community service groups and the finding a way for parole and probation to provide their crews at a lower cost to municipalities and county governments when we know that that restoration aspect of these locations often gets missed. I was just trying to how to quantify that was my second question.
So I may go in bits and pieces of what I remembered you saying. So as far as contracting with another crew to clean them up, things like that, the city has the obligation or the responsibility to store it. Things don't go directly to landfill or transfer station, thank you. They don't go directly there. So we have that. We have to store them for at least 30 days. Now, where they go from there, you know, maybe, yes, that is something that we contract with, that we don't put that on city crews. As far as the cleaning up, picking up with the county work crews, we don't have the ability to set their pricing. The county sets the pricing, and we either agree to it or not. I guess there is the ability for the city to negotiate that slightly above my pay grade, so I default to Spencer on that one. And as far as I agree on the environmental, we have current ordinances that discuss health and sanitary, health and safety, things like that. We keep that in mind when we're cleaning these camps up. That's why they are cleaned up. They're not just left. It's not just for the unsightly large piles that people will see. There is a health and sanitary component to that. That's why they're cleaned up. Did I cover them all?
Generally, I guess I agree that parole and probation sets those rates, but it's diminishing returns when I work with Javita to Officer Ballantyne, sorry, be more formal. There's a lot of poop buckets in those camps, and I don't see any reason under the law to store those for 30 days. I think the officer's discretion can be used when determining items that an individual, regardless of where they're staying or what circumstances they found themselves in when they were camping in there. The public safety issue the reasonable man statute, reasonable person statute has been challenged a lot lately, but I just feel like we should store the items that there's a propensity for that individual to reuse. And other things like food trash and garbage and things need no storage. I assume that's best practices now, right?
And there are certain things that we can't immediately throw away. So like you said, the sanitary buckets, things like that, things that are perishable items, food, wrappers, garbage, you know, the classic definition of garbage, yes. But even if these clothes or sleeping bags or blankets or a cut-down tent has been laying there for months and it appears not usable, that's not for me to decide of what somebody can and cannot reuse. We're in a very litigious society, as we know. There has been several lawsuits and several checks paid to individuals by county and city government for disposing of those things. I mean, I know that there in Washington, there was a, shortly after the Boise decision came out, and then Washington also adopted a similar law, was a tracker was put into something that was a camp that was picked up. It was not stored for 30 days, went directly to the landfill. The tracker picked all this up. The city, the county, whoever it was, violated the person's rights, threw their stuff away. They were not able to get it, and they had to be compensated for that. Now, granted, that's a clear violation.
Hey, Spencer?
Yeah, before we, because we'd like to get some specific feedback on the ordinance, I'd like to go through the maps real quickly with Derek so that you can see what we were proposing to do to see if that makes sense, and then we can come back to the issues that you have with the ordinance, and it'd be good to hear from some of the folks that are in the room as well that have been participating in these discussions. But what we borrowed from McMinnville and Coos Bay ordinances is a certain restriction of certain areas from camping and other areas than camping is allowed. And Derek will kind of work you through what's on these maps here so that you can understand what we were looking at as part of this draft approach to trying to create a legal camping ordinance that we can enforce. Just one other thing too is the option to do nothing is really not an option. We've got to do something. We just have to figure out what direction you want us to head in doing something, because our existing ordinance is not enforceable, and we get a lot of frustration from people saying, hey, I know this is an ordinance on the books. Why aren't you enforcing it? And telling them that it's an illegal ordinance usually isn't very satisfactory to them. So. But Derek, why don't you run through the maps?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I gotta love the tech. As soon as there we go. So these maps, they're a work in progress. There's still cleanup work to do with them. But what they depict are rights of way. So these are just specific to public rights of way, road rights of way. As you likely know, road rights of way are usually not fully developed. So within a road right of way, we will typically have some street improvement, maybe sidewalks, maybe a bike lane. But then the rest of it would tend to be a landscaped area or just undeveloped area within the right of way. And so what you'll find on these is that The maps show areas permissible are the bright light lines that you're seeing there on the big screen there. What I've shown on the map are zoning designations. Those are the colors, along with some terrain, just so you can kind of see what the terrain is in the background and street numbers or street names and things of that nature. So what you have here is what it depicts is that it's not permissible to camp effectively in residential areas. There are a number of reasons for that. One, you tend to have narrower rights of way in residential areas. You don't have sanitation options in residential areas outside of people's individual homes, typically. No place for trash to be disposed of appropriately or restroom facilities. And you have a higher propensity there in the residential areas. People perceive, right or wrong, that the undeveloped portion of the right-of-way is their yard. And so you have the increased risk of there being conflicts as part of that. We also ruled out areas within 100 feet of US 20 and 101 for safety, given the volume of vehicle traffic on those two highways. Those are our only two arterial roadways, and the volume of traffic on those two roadways is very, very high. And then the other is we've carved out the tourist-oriented destinations like Nye Beach and the Bayfront and the Aquarium and Hatfield areas in South Beach, because these are highly visited areas, and certainly in the, you know, with the Bayfront in particular and Nye Beach, the core areas of Nye Beach, they are very congested, particularly seasonally. So there's lots of different competing uses for longer periods of time in those areas. Parks are out, but public properties that are adjacent to commercial or industrial properties are included. And so that's what you'll see on the maps. Not a lot of options up in the Agate Beach area, because we don't have a lot of commercial industrial property up in there.
Yeah, the light green areas are the right-of-ways that are...
Right, those where I tried to make them as bright as I could on these maps, so you could see these are the areas where it would be permissible. As you move further down, then you'll see they get picked up here, but you have that 100-foot separation from 101. Because Newport's commercial and industrial areas are pretty tight to 20 and 101, you see, you know, you kind of see that kind of corridor effect there, but, and that's what we have with properties, with street rights away here that would be available, those here by City Hall, 9th, 7th, these parallel roadways in these commercial areas, they would be available as well. You see that extend all the way down to the bridge. There are only a couple areas over here because we just don't have a lot of commercial over here, and we carved out the water dependent areas, which would be the Bayfront. And then you get into South Beach and you'll see there's some options there too, but it's less developed than the rest of the city, so you don't have as many street rights of way in play in South Beach. So really, I think what we're looking for is, you know, again, this is a discussion draft. You know, is the reasoning here something that you might be able to get behind, or at least are comfortable moving forward in the process, or do you believe other areas should potentially be made available that we're not identifying at this point in time, or if you have any other thoughts relative to the maps, we'd appreciate it.
I got a question.
So, Derek, when you look at the South Beach one, along Abalone there, my understanding is south of 26th Street, but west of the bridge is ODOT property. So other than the right-of-way itself, allowing camping along the right-of-way, wouldn't that encourage camping on the ODOT property? Or how would you regulate that?
I mean, the allowance would be specific to the right-of-way, and I guess we would regulate it by dealing with it on a case-by-case basis as to whether or not it appears that the camping is straying out of the right-of-way onto the publicly owned property, which, yeah, like you said, over in that Safe Haven Hill area, that's all ODOT up in that area.
And then the right of way by the big boat, by the way, is for sale if you're interested. How far off the paved street does that right of way go? My understanding, I asked this before, I forgot the number, but I thought it was a 40 foot. So would that include the portion of the right of way? So that's on either side of the city hardscape, or does it include the street, the sidewalk, and undeveloped land, depending on the width?
Yeah, depending on the width of the right of way, you could have just a street and then undeveloped area, or you could have a fully developed right of way where you have sidewalk on both sides and no additional land. So it varies depending on the street segment we're talking about.
I guess just trying to explain this to the public and how that would work, I guess, would be the biggest challenge.
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that should be noted too is you can't block a traffic lane or a sidewalk with your camping under the ordinance. So,
right.
So there has to be enough space outside of the sidewalk or the traffic lane.
I have seen MPD in that area because that's part of that area that might be annexed. And there's little pockets of property in there, but I assume that this map assumes that annexation would be successful. Is that for 40th specifically?
Yeah, again, the map's dealing with
parts of Chestnut too.
Yeah, the map's dealing with existing city right-of-ways.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. All right, roger that.
Okay, Dietmar?
So, Chief, my question is probably different than some you've heard. How do you distinguish between tourists and homeless people when it comes to camping on the streets then, if we put this ordinance together?
We don't.
Dietmar, can you speak
to
the mic?
My question is, how do you distinguish between tourists and homeless when we put this ordinance, if we put this ordinance in place, that means anybody can come to town and park on our streets?
So we don't differentiate. Everything in here refers to camper, person. It doesn't say anything about socioeconomic status.
But don't we have an ordinance in place right now that says RVs can't park on roads? Do we have something like that, David?
We do, which has been, it's illegal.
Yeah,
72
we do, but it's 72 hours.
Yeah.
Parking lots are 16 hours. Well, it depends on the parking lot, but the general parking lot is 16 hours and streets are 72 hours. But again, this is something that's currently being challenged. Lacey?
Yeah,
Lacey,
there's a federal district court case that I think is on appeal right now regarding a homeless person living in an RV, and they basically tried to regulate it at the city level, and that's been challenged, and it's, I think, still at the Ninth Circuit. I'm not sure if they've decided. This was last fall, I think I last checked. But so even RVs are put in that category as far as the type of issues we're trying to address with this overall issue.
And you'll see you may have seen many RVs or cars parked in the same area that people are clearly living in. We will not tow an occupied car or an RV. So we work with them, we talk to them, we plead with them, but right now we don't have an option for them to go to. So let's fast forward to this is implemented as is or even similar. We can contact, when we talk about enforcement, we are not, our goal is not to go out and issue tickets and make a monetary damage or assessment to anybody. It's to have the tool to tell somebody if they don't move, this could possibly happen. And then we can refer them to one of the light green areas. This area is permissible.
So that means if somebody wants to come to town with an RV, not homeless, has a nice RV with a dragging a trailer or dragging a car or something, they can park in these areas designated in the light green?
Yes, and they can currently do that now.
Pardon me?
They can currently do that now.
They can currently park anywhere
street,
right now.
Any street.
Any legal parking space, anyone can do that.
Is that right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I thought we had something in the books that...
The books are gone. They're illegal. Oh. That's why we have to replace it.
So the only book we have...
But the 72-hour is not illegal.
No, 72-hour is still a thing, but if it's an occupied vehicle...
Then
we're very limited in what we can do with it if it's parked in one of the areas that would not be allowed here. So the problem is, you know, just like what you're referring to, Dietmar, we get calls from citizens saying, the ordinance says this. We can't do anything about it because we cannot enforce our existing ordinances. So we have to replace our existing ordinances with something that's fair and reasonable and will pass muster, and then we can take action. So, for example, you know, if someone parks, you know, in front or sets up a camp in front of someone's house in the right of way, and they aren't blocking the sidewalk, they aren't blocking the street, they are perfectly legal doing that right now. We cannot enforce that issue. We can talk to them and suggest they might move to some other place, but whether they do or not is not, it's up to them. So right now we have no there's some aspects of regulations that, you know, the 72-hour parking, for example, is something in some cases we can enforce. Or nuisance issues, those we can enforce. But not someone camping or setting up a tent anywhere they want in the public right of way at this point.
How does the RV industry take that? I mean, have we heard from them about that?
It's out of their ballpark, so.
Yeah, and we run into this regardless of somebody's ability to have a house or not in the summertime when the RV parks are full. They're just wherever they can find a spot.
Well, I will refer that establish camping availability issue in the summer to the Lincoln County Planning Commission on that, but... I would say, Dietmar, one way you can tell is that the Sprinter vans with Washington plates are tourists.
Yeah, I know out-of-state plates, but I mean, still, it's...
Camping joke.
I would hate to see ours become a open... Well, if we designate the streets that are marked on here, then is that legal then? I mean, are we within our
rights? Because what we have to do as a governmental body is we have to provide options for people to... sleep in proximity to services within the community. We can't say Newport is off limits to all camping. The courts have ruled that is not enforceable. That's kind of what our current ordinances do. And that's why at this point we can't really enforce some potentially bad situations. You know, someone could camp, for example, right in front of the schools. If there's room in the right of way to do that, we can't do anything about that. Is that an appropriate spot for people to camp? I'm not sure.
Answer is no, by the way.
On that one. Third Street is highlighted as availability to park right by the school, high school. So, I mean, the map that you drew up, is that just arbitrarily picked these, or how did you pick all this, Derek?
Yeah, it was basically a combination of zoning and distance from corridors, so... But Derek can elaborate.
Right, that's commercial zone property immediately south of the high school. So we went ahead and picked that up. So we didn't put in place any kind of buffer from schools.
And that's a possibility.
Sure.
To do.
Yeah, and you know, the state's given, the legislature is giving cities and counties an opportunity under House Bill 3115 to try to develop mechanisms to, you know, comply with the federal decisions through at the federal court level and also address these issues we're talking about, you know, time, place, and manner. I mean, that's really what it's about, is what's objectively reasonable as far as the timing, where you're the place, and also how you're regulating it. So we've got some time to work on it, but these questions I'm hearing from council members are, there's no easy answer, and they're very good questions, and that's what we're struggling with right now, is how to address all these issues and come to some reasonable conclusion.
Another question to follow up that. How generous do we have to be with our streets to allow parking? I mean, is what we're being presented, is that the minimum amount that you can do, or can we just open one street in the city? Or, I mean, you've suggested lots of different options here. Does the new laws, federal requirements, address how much needs to be available?
Yeah, David can respond to that.
So the way that the law tries to define what's reasonable as far as the objectively reasonable time, place, and manner regulations, this is the language, and you can read into it what you can, but it says reasonableness shall be determined based on the totality of the circumstances, including but not limited to the impact of the law on persons experiencing homelessness. That's how they define reasonable. So again, there's not much direction other than it all depends on if it ever came to a point where the city of Newport or another city actually put in place an ordinance like the city of Coos Bay. And, you know, once this law is in place, it does have a provision that allows someone experiencing homelessness to bring a suit for injunctive or declaratory relief to challenge the objective reasonableness of the regulation. So once these are in place, there is the ability to challenge whether it's reasonable or not in court. Now, it's not about monetary damages. It's about whether if someone brings a suit in court, they can prevent the law from continuing unless it's changed if the court decides that it is that the regulation is not objectively reasonable. So that's the mechanism to actually challenge it in court once these ordinances are put in place.
Yeah. Well, we just built a nice new hospital, beautiful structure, beautiful campus. But now I noticed that all the streets around the hospital are designated as campable. That means that one day we wake up and we have RVs parked on all the streets around the hospital.
Well, right now, according to the ordinance, 8 at night to 6 in the morning would be a possibility with the, again, with what we've laid out here. The one thing, too, I think before we, and Mayor, we do have some folks that might have some feedback. I think it'd be good to hear from.
Yeah, I want to get two more comments, okay. And then
we'll okay, get I'll, to okay. I'll shut up now. Yeah.
Okay, Beatrice, and then CM.
Well, I'm going to put a question. Then maybe I'm thinking. What is our relationship to take this effort forward to the community with the community. I just kind of thinking, are we engaging, the population, the community to find out where they want to be? And also, I think it's a plan that I feel is ambitious, but also, are we engaging the community to find out more about how they feel about it. And the other part that I have a question is how are we gonna manage with someone who has mental illness, when asking, this is not the place. I'm wondering how you are managing right now and the resources that are offered to individuals that need that kind of support.
Probably another 2-hour meeting to answer that. mental health, it is real. It is something we currently deal with every day. We deal with it yesterday. We know we're going to deal with it tomorrow. Our officers are, they are trained in dealing with people that are experiencing mental health issues, but they are not trained to, they can deal with it now, but they are not the resource to help them. They can help facilitate. We have, the people to call, things like that. But again, we have very limited resources for our people that are experiencing any kind of mental crisis. So what's left is usually our officers, our businesses, our residents being left to deal with them because there isn't a resource for everybody. And things have changed. I mean, early in my career, we would take people into protective custody. They'd end up, Mayor Sawyer can remember these days, people we transport to the hospital, we transport to Corvallis. That doesn't happen anymore. And so it's just a very limited resource. I wish we had unlimited funding to be able to get the counselors in here in the housing for the counselors that we need, but we're struggling with that. So I don't have a good answer for that. And we deal with it daily. I know Tracy can talk about this also. We deal with them every day. And we do the best that we can and try to get them the help that they need, but they also, some of them don't want help, which is another challenge. And again, you can't make people do certain things.
It is challenging. And my last question is, one of the parts with Coos Bay and McMee Mill, I mean, you said that are working. When you said that are working, what do you mean working? Is that proof? Is that something that shows that it's working? I mean, just trying to figure out. I was looking for some information. I couldn't find anything.
So there, when I talked to the Coos Bay chief and the McMinnville chief, they kind of judge it by their number of complaints. Their number of complaints from the community went down. Their number of complaints of garbage, the amount of money they were spending on garbage pickup went down. And so, I mean, that's how we identify as something of an improvement or a working. Are we spending less time on it now than we were yesterday? And their answer is yes. And it was pretty instantaneous where they started seeing improvements based on the fact that business community wasn't calling in as much, residents weren't calling in as much. And so the officers, I mean, we spend a lot of time responding to complaints regarding the homeless, generally the camping, not just somebody being homeless. But we respond to a lot of camping complaints, and that means we're not available to respond to other things.
And because their calls are reduced, do they have alternative resources to offer? Do they have, like, the capacity to say, you know, yeah, we reduce this because we are showing, you know, we have more, like, bathrooms available, more places where they can go, or, you know, do we have resources that we can offer alternative
resources? Well, I think we have a lot of resources we have a lot of discussions about this. You know, where does the city want to put the resources and the funds that we have available, and to where, to who, things like that. I think those are still under discussion. Still a lot of internal discussions in the city, I think, and my guess, not having a crystal ball or anything, but this is something that's probably gonna be in front of you again with some recommendations and suggestions. One of the things Coos Bay has is they have a nonprofit for transitional housing. It's run by them, by the nonprofit. I can't remember the name, but they have, Derek, what are the name of those small metal houses? Yeah, it's like a Conestoga Hut, but they have 20 or 30 that are in a area run by nonprofits. It has a community bathroom. It has community storage. You know, they have certain requirements to live there, to stay there, and it's used for transitional housing for somebody to get them working and into a house. They have mental health facilities that comes to them. They have social services that comes to them. They have a bunch of great things. So they have a few things we don't have. The area, the nonprofit to partner with, and then those resources that can come in. So, I mean, I am optimistic that we could have that someday, hopefully in the near future, but for now we don't. So somebody had mentioned something about, I think Councilor Goebel had mentioned about reducing the availability. We could reduce the availability to zero camping in Newport if we had a 100-bed facility that people could go to. And so that's what the law says, is if there is no place for somebody to go, we have to make the public land available. If we have a place, those are the areas that say, okay, you can't camp here. You can go stay at this place, but if you stay here, here's the consequence. We don't have that. Again, I'm sure Tracy would love to have a 100-bed facility with 25 volunteers.
Maybe we can get the 500, the money that we are trying to do the soccer field, you know, to move to different location.
Well, we do have four, but just don't forget about it. We've got $400,000 between ARPA funds and this funds for homeless initiatives. If we can use that in a way to make the goal is to do a meaningful contribution that helps facilitate something that's going to be a long-term benefit for the community. So we have $400,000 that is available for that. And we've had some discussions with some very preliminary discussions on ideas on how to proceed with that. We're following up on those discussions going forward to see if there's something that would materialize along those lines.
Okay, CM.
I had other things in my brain, but I'm gonna just change to. Maybe we repurpose the 9th and Herbert lot and build on that lot, build up. You know, that's an option. We've got that. That's public space. It's close to City Center. It's close to services. It's got restrooms for now, but I mean, we could do a lot with that space. And maybe even see what's underground and make underground parking or something. I don't know. The other thing I'm thinking is just practical around like storage containers for folks when you're picking up campsite belongings. And do we have a place for that, or do we have enough storage containers, a locker, et cetera? And is there a way we can like purchase some of those? I'm just trying to think practically, and also in my brain, I keep thinking, what is Grace Wynn thinking? Like, I feel like this has to be collaborative and really have the buy-in of people who are front and center with our community members.
Where were you talking, CM?
I just want to hear what Grace Wynn has to say. Like,
oh, you were talking about a piece of property?
9th and Herbert.
The parking lot.
Across from that parking lot? Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Was there any questions before I give up the mic?
I will get to them. I want to make one quick comment. You know, you're talking about the items that you're storing for 30 days. I'm sure some of that stuff is good and recyclable. And I wonder if after that 30 days, you could have maybe Grace Wynn come in and say, we can use this stuff rather than throw it away. I just throw that out as an idea. I don't want any commitment right now.
It's an option to review.
The other thing is, you know, talking about Dietmar's comment about all these laws and stuff, they could all change tomorrow, and we're wasting our time today. A court tomorrow could say everybody has the right to camp anywhere, period. So we have to deal with that when that comes up. But I think we need to do something. We're in a box with the court and the state rules, and we have to work as best we can within that box to make it livable for everybody, including everybody in town and the homeless as well, because they are our residents too. Tracy, did you want to come up and say something? And Betty can come up too if she wants.
Yeah. Oh yeah, please, Betty.
You got to give politicians time.
No, you don't.
No, you don't. Yeah, Blair. If Blair wants to say something too. You got to give politicians a chance to talk.
Go ahead. So I'm Tracy with Grace Wynn Haven, and as I've been looking at this and pondering it in my head, I worry about our homeless community in this situation. I mean, it looks like, oh yeah, we're just kind of giving them a free-for-all where they can sleep. But most of our homeless don't want to be seen. That's why they're sleeping in Forest Park. That's why they're sleeping out in the woods. We are actually, by putting this into effect, I feel like we are making a target on our homeless population versus making it a better situation for anybody. It's not good for our businesses to have the camping situation, or the ones that are physically not capable to get up off of the street at 6 o'clock in the morning. I mean, we have a gentleman in the hospital right now who was 2 degrees from cardiac arrest and hypothermic shock on your guys' public ground last week, and he's still in the hospital now trying to fight infections from almost dying on our street. How in the world would he get up at 6, and he's in a wheelchair daily, how in the world will he get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and be able to pack up any kind of camp that he has, which is usually just a sleeping bag and a bag full of stuff? But, I mean, and we have another lady who's in her 70s who she can barely walk, let alone have to clean up a camp at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then we have our fish workers and the third shift people that won't have a place to sleep during the day because we're limiting the hours. And so I just feel like we are really targeting where maybe there'd be a better solution to saying, okay, we're going to take this one park, and instead of it being a park now, it's going to be a homeless camping area, or it's going, you know, or figure out where we can put in a 100-room shelter. I mean, there are places and options of that. It's just we don't have the funding to make that happen at this point. So I'm just concerned about the targeting with it being so publicized camping. Have anything you want to say about that or anything?
Well, I know this is a really tough job, and I'm glad I don't have my city councilor hat on today. So I'm Betty with Grace Wynn Haven, Betty Kamikawa. I agree with Tracy in that they don't really want to be seen. You don't see them. That's the reason you don't see them. The ones that we see every now and then out on the sidewalk sleeping or whatever, it's because they have, those are the ones with the mental health problems. They're, and, you know, and so anytime that we deal with any of this, before we talk about any of it, we have to think grace, care, compassion. These are human beings. They have to be cared for. They don't have an option of anything else right now. So we have to really, really think about what we're doing before we do it. And, you know, I agree more with Tracy in that it would be far better if we could find, if you can find some places that you can designate as camping areas where they can go. And not only that, but then you have some say about tourists who come and park too, because they're not going to be going to the camps to park. They just won't. So, you know, it's a tricky situation, and, you know, I feel for you because you got it a lot worse than Toledo, but yeah, it's going to take some real thought to do it.
So you guys don't like the street option?
I really don't.
It's if you do, you're going to have to really think about the streets that you're doing it on. You're going to have to really pinpoint areas more than anything. Just because, you know, the people in the RVs, the people in their cars, they go and they park and they're fine overnight, and then they can get up, they can move. It's the ones that are in the tents and that don't have an option to pick up and move every day, or they're the ones that are sleeping, you know, they have to sleep during the day because they work at night. So it's a really tricky issue, and it's a big population that, you know, that we don't see. And you know, I worry about, in some ways it's like we want to hide them, but in other ways it's, you know, it's like we're not trying to hide people. We're trying to consider their safety and their privacy too. So, and that's another education piece, is that we have to consider those things too for them. It's not all about the neighbors and the neighborhoods. It's about those people that are actually having to do this and sleep in a tent. The hardcore ones, there's maybe 10% of the people that we deal with are hardcore homeless people who have no intention of ever being anything but a homeless person, and they're always going to be there. But they have their places where they go, and you don't see them, and they're never going to come out of those places. You know, it's the people, like, they're new to it. They're, you know, we get the people who got displaced from the hotel in Toledo. We're still trying to figure out, you know, how, they don't even know how to be homeless yet, and it's been several months. And they're homeless, but they don't even know how to be homeless yet. So, you know, it's like that, you know, until we can get enough housing, and that's, I'm helping with the housing capacity, and that is a fantastic thing you guys are doing, that, and engaging people, and of all different types of people, including somebody who deals with the homeless like us. And that's really going to help in the long run. But it's the in-between periods right now. So, you know, just think kindness and compassion and the grace while you're doing it. And it'll work out. You just have to really think about what you're doing and on both sides of it. And then it's going to be education.
The question is, do you think we ought to move forward with this?
With that plan, the way it is right now?
Yeah.
Probably not, because it's too much on the roadways. And I wouldn't just now put on my city council hat. I'd look at that and be like, well, I would want to look at it more closely and pinpoint exact places more but more than that, I would want to find out from the homeless. That was one of the suggestions. Find out where they want to be, or why they're where they want, why they are where they are, because some of those places along there are not, the services are far away from. The further you get to the bridge, or the closer you get to the bridge, the further you are from the stores, the further you are from Grace Winds, the further, you know, it's like, what's the chance of them really going there? And what's the, you know, so to engage the homeless, and then you'd have to do that through the churches, through Grace Winds, through, you know, because they're not going to come to, if you have a form like this, they're not going to show up because they just, that's not what they do. So you're going to have to actually go to a place where they're at and, you know, engage them and ask, you know, or just give Tracy a list of questions.
So Betty, on that, the city engaged a lot of the ecumenical groups to allow, remind me if this happened, right? We sent a letter out to allow camping on church properties and commercial, and we got
zero responses.
Yeah. So could you provide city staff a different strategy idea, maybe in an email to or something, so that if we were to do that again, we'd actually get some nibbles? Because it's a platitude I hear a lot, but unless they're actually set up for success to physically host, the outreach is just bouncing off a wall. You know what I mean?
So unfortunately, we don't even get the support of much for churches or other organizations. I mean, we have probably five churches that actually help us in our entire community with what we're doing. And, you know, St. Stephen's was doing an overnight camping thing and was extremely happy doing it until there was they couldn't get help if they needed it because it wasn't a legit program. And so then the police would show up and they'd be like, well, they have more of a right than you do because they're living here and you're not.
Spencer, did you have a comment?
Yeah, just a couple things. One, I think the focus of this ordinance is likely something that would be done and enforced on a complaint basis. So people that are truly out of sight are probably not going to be directly impacted by this. So the folks that really want privacy, and if they're truly out of sight, and we don't have complaints on it, it's not something we're intending to react to. The second thing, and we've spent, you know, literally hours trying to figure out, you know, and because conceptually we were looking at, is there a spot where we could make a camping area? And that's, and the problem is that camping area has to be close to services. And so do you have a spot that you can think of?
No, because you're talking right in the middle of Newport. I mean, it's a really difficult situation for you guys.
This is a complicated issue. There is no simple solution. It's just like any other ordinance that we pass. We refine them over time as things happen. And I think that's probably what's going to happen here. If I could, we have to move on because we have other things to do. But Blair, if you could, did you want to make a comment?
Thank you. For folks who don't know me, I'm Blair Bobier. I'm the director of the Legal Aid Office in Lincoln County. We are a nonprofit organization that provides legal representation to low-income and no-income residents. So I know this is a very challenging issue, and I appreciate all the work that has gone into this, and I also really appreciate how the city has worked to view this as a human issue and trying to accommodate the folks who are out on the streets. I want to emphasize one thing that the chief said, and that is when it comes right down to it, the case out of Idaho, the Martin v. Boise, what it basically said was as long as you've got a shelter, you can basically ban camping, because what happened in Martin was they were giving people citations for sleeping out on the street when there wasn't sufficient shelter space, and there might have been some shelter that had a religious requirement. I might be mixing up my cases, but there have to be low barrier, no barrier shelters for people to get into. If Newport built a shelter between now and when House Bill 3115 went into effect, you'd basically solve your camping problem. I don't know that would take care of it 100%, but I think it would go a long, long ways. One of the things that's really interesting about House Bill 3115 is it talks about what's reasonably objective, but it includes the standpoint of someone who's homeless. So as David knows, when we deal with legal situations all the time, there's the reasonable person standard. That comes up time and time again. In this House bill, it's what is reasonably what's objectively reasonable from the point of someone who's homeless. So when I look at someone having to pack up at 6 a.m, lug their stuff around every day, and I look at that from the point of someone who's potentially my client, I can't say that's reasonable. So I think that's the real fatal flaw in this ordinance. So I think the more alternatives you can come up with, whether it's a central camping spot, and Councillor Hall mentioned the lot on 9th and Herbert, and I know there's some space also next to St. Stephen's. I don't know what the deal is with that big parking lot that the school district owns, but the more alternatives that you can come up with, both in terms of shelter and camping, the less likely it is that the other regulations are going to be an issue. So let's see if I have anything else. I guess I would just add that this is a very dynamic situation, and while it is changing, you can make decisions based on what's happening now. There's always going to be litigation. The Grants Pass case is not settled. That's up on appeal. The case out of Boise is settled, but there's a bunch of cases in federal courts in California that some are dealing with camp cleanup and sweeps and the like. And if those go up to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, those will also affect us here in Oregon. And then I'll just kind of close by saying, with all due respect, I know the chief was talking about League of Oregon Cities and the attorneys from the Boise case and the attorneys from Grants Pass. Those were the losing attorneys. I just think it's worth noting. People have been litigating this stuff for a long time, and the way I think to insulate yourselves the best you can from lawsuits is to see things from the perspective of the homeless folks, provide as many options as possible, both camping and shelter, and then I think that really goes a long way to addressing the situation.
Okay, thank you. You have a good point about attorneys. We all have to listen. We all have to listen to attorneys, right, David?
No, actually, Blair and I went to Lewis and Clark Law School. We were only a couple years apart. I remember actually Blair when we were in law school, and
I do want to say
really
one
good job there.
I do want to say one thing. I got a call last week from a businessman down by 9th and Herbert, and they're very upset with that location. They're having problems, and you know. You can identify all these places in town, and there's going to be people that are going to be upset with this plan, that just the way it is. And it's just unfortunate, but I think we have to do the best that we can because, again, as I said earlier, we have to help these people because they are people and they deserve it. Okay, Peggy, do we need a break so we can eat?
Yeah, that would be great.
Just before we do that, though, really quickly, is there any direction for us?
Oh, I don't think so.
Cynthia.
Yes, I would like the city council to consider separating the campers into two different kinds of campers, the vehicle campers for the streets and the tent campers for, we have to find a place.
Here, here.
And I also would say I'm really interested in seeing how we can repurpose the 9th and Herbert space. Like, why don't we start building? People would support a capital campaign. People would make that happen. And people who have concerns with it being an open parking space right now, that would be remedied with, like, an actual building and structure. I don't think, even if we had the whole $400,000, I don't know how much that gets us, but could we do a bond? Could we do a levy? Could we do, like, some partnership with different organizations or state grants? I don't know. I just think we got to try that.
Just on that particular issue, it's probably not us doing it. It's probably us providing funding for an organization to do it because that's not our business. And
And on that, let's make sure we don't repeat the glaring mistake that happened with the I-5 bridge, where discussions and project funding matches resulted. The result for the public was $220 million spent, no bridge, no plan. So I'm very cautious, and I'm against bonding for this. I just, the tax base right here can't support it. At least I can. I don't know.
Okay, any more comments for Spencer?
Just one. I really agree with what Cynthia was saying, and I think we need to understand the problem we're trying to solve rather than throw a solution at a problem we don't understand. And I think people who are mobile, who have a vehicle that's a shelter. And they're a very different population, and they can get up at 6 in the morning and move. It's very different than somebody in a tent or a family in a tent and trying to pack up all your stuff. And they're just different populations. And to just say the homeless, if we keep saying the homeless, we'll never solve the problem, because the problem isn't the homeless. It's people who are homeless, and they're very different people. And I think we got to go back. You know, there's some start, I think, around what do you do with vehicles. But I don't think that solves, and I think that's one area to focus on. But until we really come up with a way to provide some solution here for folks, and which I think is shelter, and I think I appreciated the comments from Grace Wins and from Blair. And it's not something the city can do, but it's something the city can do with the county. The county would be a big player. Nonprofits could be a big player, churches could be, but we're still kicking this around after 10, 15 years in this community. And one last comment, because I'm hungry too. I don't think I used to be in the mental health business, and so I know, but I'm not, I've cleared my mind of that a lot. But Coos and Yamhill counties were really exceptionally good county mental health programs with a lot of housing. Historically, it wasn't something, and it makes some sense that there were options for those populations so that you could target the problems that you needed to solve, because there were community housing, and we have very little of that in this community. And so I think that needs to be part of the solution. It's not something that happens tomorrow, but if until we have, you know, adequate resources for people to have places to live.
What do you think of this approach?
The one that we're...
Yeah.
I think it's a start around the functionally home, people who are functionally homeless, who have who have at least a shelter, who are moving.
Who are mobile.
And can move in them. And it's a different, it is very different from somebody who's living in a tent. It's a totally different... and so one's addressing where do we park people, but the other is as Cynthia said, I think we need to separate. There are more than one problem to be solved, and I think this is probably a very good start at that vehicle problem. It needs to be refined, but I think that's a good start on it.
David?
I'd just like to say one thing, because, you know, from a legal standard, and Blair would concur with this, we really have to look at what's objectively reasonable. And Blair brought up the appropriate point about, you know, from whose perspective. So, you know, from my perspective, if we're going to try and put something together that's objectively reasonable, that complies with what House Bill 3115 requires, you know, the council sets policy, but really we need to do the outreach to the folks that can provide us that yes. input that gives us a sense of what is objectively reasonable, like Blair and Betty and others. And from my standpoint, that's going to be valuable in trying to draft an ordinance that complies with the state law.
Yeah, I agree with Cynthia and Jan. I think we need to hopefully find some kind of solution for the people that are living in tents and what they can do with the tent during the day. I think that's problematic for me. Does that give you enough information to move forward on this?
Maybe.
Maybe.
probably not.
Yeah. We, you know, probably the biggest issue, and I think the one concern I've got about this issue more than anything else is, you know, there's people getting very frustrated on all sides of this issue with the camping issue. And I think we're going to be hearing more and more people, you know, coming forward, wondering why we aren't doing anything with this. It puts us in an awkward position because we currently have an ordinance we can't enforce, and they know what that ordinance is. And it's almost like, you know, maybe we need to take that right off the books and have no ordinance because it's almost worse right now to have, you know, something that's clear that we can't enforce rather than having nothing at all. But I think it's been a good discussion, and at a staff level, we'll you know, come back and take a look at what we might be able to do going forward. But
all right, Beatrice, real quick. We got to move on.
I just have a question. I'm thinking about what he said, you know, about we haven't done in 10 years is because we don't have people ready to do something like this, or because we don't have the funding, or how, I mean, or we maybe need to work on, you know, how to connect with people that are ready. Maybe there are some people that are ready to do it, but we don't know. I don't know if we have to put it out there and say, hey, somebody's ready to do, to have a shelter.
No, I think generally the city of Newport is like almost every other city in the state. I mean, this is a crisis wherever you have people that are congregating from Portland to Salem to Newport, to, you know, places where people are comfortable being and living, and nobody has figured this out. I don't think, in my opinion, you know, I'm not sure of a successful, I mean, there are successful programs, but as far as resolving homelessness, it's a problem that goes beyond the city of Newport and beyond Lincoln County and beyond the state of Oregon, you know.
But I mean, somebody who's ready to do, to have a shelter, to manage a shelter, do we have people that are ready to do something like that, that, you know?
Yeah, one of the issues that I pointed out in my background report is the capacity to partner with a nonprofit that could take a project that CM talked about of building a building and doing that there. We don't have anyone that we have been able to connect with that would have that kind of capacity. Grace Wins does an excellent job of what they do, but the scope of, you know, they're limited. This is Grace Wins right here, you know. And to do anything beyond that is a real struggle for Grace Wins, the way they're currently constructed. So whether Grace Wins would have the capability of kind of beefing up to fill a role, or whether we partner with another organization or whatever, but finding that organization is a real, because we are not a social service agency. We have a hard enough time patching roads and keeping parks open and policing and doing fire protection. You know, the social service end of things, we can help facilitate, we can help try to accommodate certain things, but we are not a social service agency as a city. So the role we play is a little different than I think what others can play, you know, around the table. But we can bring people to the table to have those discussions. But no, if you can point to a city that's resolved this issue, that's had the problem, the best we could find is, you know, like I said, Coos Bay and McMinnville seem to reduce some of the tensions that are there between the homeless population and the residential population. But, you know, my concern is that this thing just kind of starts exploding a bit, and it's not going to be a pleasant situation. Yeah.
There's no easy answer. If there was an easy answer, we wouldn't be talking about it. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a 10-minute break. And if you all want to go get your dinner, I believe it's in the lunchroom. Is that correct?
Conference room A.
And then when we're done with that, we have to come back because Derek has a few minutes on one more item, and then we have Ryan for the urban renewal.
That's six.
I don't know how realistic a 5-minute meeting is, but we'll see.
No, it is for that.